Hi, everybody. My name's Pat Martin. Hopefully we're in the right place talking about always on new technology in SQL Server 12. I've been talking to a few people this morning, and pretty much everybody I've spoken to has got kind of severe headaches. So I guess last night was pretty good. So I thought, given that you may be feeling in that state, what you really need is a loud video to listen to, just to make you feel a little better. So let me just switch across. And let me play you this video. All about always on. It's only 2 minutes, but it's good to have a little bit of fun. I hope you enjoy it. Another time. I hope you enjoyed it. So just very quickly, why that video? Well, it's fun. It's a nice video. And it's good to ski like that. So Bo Miller was one of the world's fastest downhill skiers a few years back. And he's about the best in his game. And he lost a ski, and that's how he skied down. So there's a good kind of metaphor there, which is to have two of everything. And that goes for network cards, switches, RAID arrays, and skis. He had a lot less resistance, yeah. So anyway, enough of that. Waffle on, I'll lose my time. So my name is Pat Martin, SQL Server engineer with Microsoft New Zealand. I've been with Microsoft for a little over 10 years now, and I've been very fortunate to see a lot of customer SQL Server installations in many different parts of the world. We run these things called health checks and run them for lots of customers. I've done a lot of them. And we often spend time talking about disaster recovery and high availability. And that's kind of interesting and fun and very fortunate. All right, so we're talking about a new technology in SQL Server 12, version 11, something called Always On. So what is it? I'll talk about it just by way of a brief introduction, tell you what it's for, what you can do with it, I'll also focus on something called readable secondaries, which you see here on the agenda, because this technology is really for two things. High availability really is just one of them. The other is for scale-out reading, to offload work from your transactional systems, which for me personally is the key deliverable of SQL Server 12. That's just a personal observation. I think that's a fantastic thing that we've waited for a long time. Secondary replica backups. Talk a little bit about taking your backups on the secondary servers. Maybe you've got some large databases. They take a long time to back up. Well, it would be nice to back them up somewhere else and get that workload off that primary system. A little bit about failover cluster instances, because there's also been some extensions to clustering in Always On. That's a very key part of Always On technology. Clustering is very much part of the solution. It's been extended and enhanced. It's not going away. So you do need to keep up to date with clustering. And then you can combine these technologies, which we'll talk about. All right, so we're going to go pretty quickly, just in the interest of time, and I'll be wishing I hadn't played the video when we get 2 minutes from the end. All right, so introducing Always On, we've got the capability to fail over multiple databases at the same time. So we take a database, and then we take some more databases, and we collect a group of them, and we say, this is my group, this is my unit of work, I can fail over all those databases from this location to another location. Why is that interesting? Two reasons. From a Microsoft perspective, we have technologies that do use more than one database. SharePoint and BizTalk are good examples. So the solution for using this technology for those products is still evolving. And you'll see lots of white papers and information out there about how to do that. And the second half is you may well have applications where more than one database is used by an application. It's not always a one-to-one correspondence. And you may have this need to fail them over or correlate them or synchronize them together and fail them over as a unit. One other thing very quickly too, you'll see I kind of drone on a lot, but one other thing very quickly too is a very good way to group these databases is based on service level agreements. A lot of companies have tiered databases, 1, 2, 3, 4. It's a very interesting thought and way of thinking, well, perhaps I'll group my databases together based on my tier. And I can see a lot of scope and interest around that. Multiple secondaries, we'll talk more, but you can have 4 secondaries. Unlike database mirroring, where you could only have one at any point in time, well, here you can have 4. Quite a few folks come to me from time to time and say, do we really need 4, Pat? Is that not a bit of an overkill? Well, maybe, but there might be some environments where it's useful to be able to do that. They're active. The secondaries are active. You can read from them, and I mentioned that before. Fast client redirection, a key capability to bring your secondary system, your secondary application up very, very quickly without having to wait for DNS refresh and IP and time to live. And that can take a long time to get that IP registration back up and running. Multi-site clustering, some enhancements that we'll talk about. All right, availability groups. Already mentioned the ability to fail over multiple databases as a unit. You can have 4 secondaries. So I've got my primary set of databases, and I've got up to 4 secondaries for that database set. 2 of those can be synchronous, and 2 can be asynchronous. Or you could have 1 synchronous, but 2 is the maximum number of synchronous. Only 1 can be automatically failed over. So if you combine a SQL failover cluster with an always-on availability group, that availability group, you can't configure it to be automatic failover. Why not? Because the cluster itself contains those databases, which already is running in automatic failover mode. And you can't have 2 things taking charge of automatic failover at the same time. We don't allow that to happen. So your movement can be synchronous or asynchronous, compression, encryption built in. Flexible failover policy we'll come back to when we talk about clustering enhancements. Automatic page repair. We got a lot of good feedback from customers in the early days of database mirroring, and we were told, hey, you know, you can have a database where a page is corrupted, and mirroring's great, but this page will also be mirrored. So now I've got this corrupted page in 2 places. And we enhanced the mirroring capabilities to take care of a page repair on the fly based on certain error codes that you could get from Windows. So
that behavior is the same, but now you've got four possible places for that corrupted page to be repaired from. So that's a good thing. Integrated, in the sense that applications can use a virtual name. I'll show you how this works, but basically instead of using a SQL Server name to connect to your databases, you use a virtual name, which is a bit like a virtual name of a cluster. So you set up your availability group and you set up something called a listener. And that listener has a name. And that listener is a cluster resource that moves around the machines on the cluster based on failover. So the physical location of that listener can move based on where you are at any point in time. And providing your application is using the listener name and not the database name, it will move quite happily to the active node or the active host for that availability group. So you're isolated from failures. So the listener name is a fantastic way to manage that. Integrated into configurations, wizards, dashboards. Again, we'll have a look at some of that. Rich diagnostic infrastructure. We've changed the way that clustering works in the sense of something called the is-alive and looks-alive checks. They now work very differently. And they also apply to these failover groups. And again, we'll come back to that. File stream replication. Database mirroring does not support a capability to mirror a database file stream. So if you have a file stream data type in a mirror, it can't be replicated and it's not supported. It is supported for an always-on group. So this is a nice addition to the technology. Publisher replication, the publisher can be treated as part of the group but not the distributor. That's not in the current release. Flexible failover policy, we'll talk about that in clustering. Efficient, active secondaries. I'm sure I have a discussion at least once a month with customers when I strongly suggest to them that in their clusters they run in active passive mode or they have at least one machine that's passive. For high availability reasons, for the ability to do patching on the fly, to roll over your passive node and roll back, and to simplify your high availability solution. So we do strongly suggest to customers that you have a passive node. But that comes at a cost, and machines are getting more and more expensive, and scaling up a machine is getting more expensive. So now you've got this expensive box that's sitting there idle. And that can be a difficult conversation at times. So with this technology, that secondary machine doesn't need to be idle. It can be active. It can be used for reading those secondary databases and for backups. All right, so that's a quick introduction. Here's a couple of scenarios. It's quite a nice picture. This is showing you two pictures, effectively. The one on the top left is the simpler of the two pictures, which is where I have direct attached storage. There's no shared storage, but I still have a Windows cluster. So let's be very, very clear. To use an always-on availability group, you have to first build a Windows cluster. Not a SQL cluster, but a Windows cluster. And every machine that's participating in that cluster can, once it's part of a Windows cluster, can be the host for an availability group. So the picture shows a high availability scenario. The black flag is showing the current location of the database. It's what's known as the primary replica. And in real time, it's being replicated to another three locations. One of them's quite local. Another one is what's called regional, still a long way away if you look at the scale of the map. And the other one's on the different coastline. One, the dotted line is async, and the solid line is synchronous. So we've got multiple high availability scenarios here. And high availability and disaster recovery are really kind of combined because our local high availability between those local sites within the same data center, but we've also got this async DR of that database out to our remote site. This is a big advantage because currently if you think of high availability and disaster recovery, what I often see is customers combining different technologies. A very common one, for example, is clustering plus log shipping or clustering plus database mirroring. That's okay, but I'm having to manage two technologies. Here I can use one technology to solve both requirements. The one on the bottom right is a little bit similar, but here we've got a SQL Server cluster because you can see the little disk at the bottom of these machines which depicts shared storage. This is actually our SAN here. So we've got two clusters separated, and the databases are being replicated asynchronously between those clusters. So I've got high availability from my SQL cluster and disaster recovery from my async replication of my database set. So now the question becomes, well, when should I still have a cluster versus just having an availability group for HA and for DR? And this is to do with the extra capabilities of the cluster in that the entire instance is protected. So it's a good picture. It's a useful picture. What I'd really like you to take away from this picture is an understanding that the Windows cluster does not need shared storage. When I first heard this, I was very confused, because if you've been working with clustering for a long time, you associate SQL Server clustering with the requirement to have some shared storage. For always on availability group, you do not need any shared storage unless you choose to have a SQL cluster in addition to the group. Because that top left picture shows you quite clearly all of those locations just have local storage. So this simplifies your building of a cluster from an infrastructure perspective, because the two difficult areas are the network and the shared storage. So if the shared storage goes away, I'm really left with the networking as my challenge. All right, so what does the architecture look like? You need to build a Windows cluster. We've mentioned that a couple of times. That's the rule. Once you've built a cluster, you can go and install SQL Server on a node on that cluster. And if you do that, you'll be able to set it up as an availability group target. And then once you have it, these databases are replicated either asynchronously or synchronously between those machines. It's quite similar to mirroring in that sense, like kind of a high-level conceptual sense that these databases are being replicated between those two sites. But the code base and the technology and the actual mechanism is quite different between those two technologies. Okay. How do I set one of these up? Well, I go and build my cluster, my Windows cluster, install it on each machine, and join them to my Windows cluster. Hopefully you've got your friendly infrastructure or Windows person on site to help you to do that. Once I have my cluster, I come along and I install SQL Server on that machine. When I install SQL on the clustered machine, I still get to choose, do I want this to be a standalone instance of SQL Server, or do I want this to be a SQL Server clustered instance? So this is where it gets a little tricky, and you kind of think, well, I've got a Windows cluster. Do I install the SQL as a SQL clustered instance or just a standalone instance on that Windows cluster? So you can be forgiven for being a little confused when you first see that, because you can combine those technologies. Once you've done that, if you fire up Configuration Manager, you'll be able to go and set up that machine to use always on. All right, create the endpoint so that the machines and the primary can talk to the secondary. These availability groups can communicate with each other. So, just a recap. I can install a Windows cluster, set up that cluster, join the machines to the cluster, install SQL Server, create an availability group, and replicate those databases between those two machines. If that is all I want to do, I'm done. I only need to do the pieces in the orange rectangle. Okay? If all I'm doing is setting up separate instances of SQL Server across these clustered nodes. But if I want to set up a SQL Server cluster on top of the Windows cluster, and I hope you're still following me here, now I have to do the blue bit, which is my normal SQL cluster stuff. Set up my shared disk, set up my resource groups, configure the virtual networks, the domain accounts, all of the things that I would do normally to create a SQL cluster, I go and do that. But as you can see in the vertical rectangle, that's optional. You don't have to do it if you don't want to. Okay, that's a choice. You don't need the shared storage if you choose not to have a SQL cluster. The Windows cluster itself, it looks very easy on a screen like that. Simplified setup, press next a few times and it's all done. I don't suppose there's anybody in this room that thinks that's really the case. It is easier if you're not using shared storage because you have only got the network to consider. You would typically get the Windows cluster built by that part of your organization that is responsible for building a Windows cluster. It's normally not the DBA that would build the Windows cluster, at least not in my experience. Once you have it, actually setting it up and creating the cluster is exactly what you see on the screen here. It's that simple once the infrastructure is working. That's the key point. All right, so just a recap, a little picture of some availability groups, just for your conceptual understanding. An availability group, we've got a picture here, test AG with some replicas. So the availability group is called test AG, and it has two databases as part of that group. And that availability group, the primary, because there's only one primary at any one point in time, is on the machine that you see there. And the other three that you see are all secondaries. So there's four secondaries in use for that database set. So those databases are continually being replicated across all four of those instances. And there are performance considerations that you need to consider very carefully if you're doing that in a synchronous way. And we often see almost daily questions about, what do I need to do this synchronously? Can I do this synchronously? What's the impact on my application? Is it going to be okay for the users? My only comment really is you don't need to theorize about that or read white papers. That's not the way to solve that problem. There are many, many, many performance counters. Do the engineering, do the sums, take the metrics, and you'll be able to close down very, very, in a very detailed way in terms of milliseconds, what is the overhead of this synchronous replication. So do the testing. Don't kind of try and think it through. The availability replica itself, the SQL Server instances that are part of the group which host the physical copy of the database. So at any point in time, a given SQL Server instance is either the primary host for that group or it's the secondary. Or if it's moving from one to the other, it goes into what's known as a resolving state. All right, the availability database is any database, really. Any database that's part of an availability group. A little note here, it can be a contained database. I haven't really heard anybody talking much about contained databases, and I didn't either earlier in the week, but these things contain the logins, effectively. The logins can move with the database to save you having to script logins out and back in again. So this is kind of the first part, I think, of a longer solution from us to really allow that self-containment to happen. And those databases can also be part of that availability group. So now I don't have to manage logins if this thing moves across. It's just another thing that I don't have to manage as a DBA. So let me remember to switch the button. Wow, that was cool. I was told to press this button. I'll press it again. High availability, two of everybody, you see. It always comes back to that. All right, so we've got our... what I want to show you and just go through quickly is looking at an availability group in Management Studio and on the cluster. So you can see here a Windows cluster with a SQL Server cluster also installed. I built this. I built six machines for a roadshow that I did, so luckily I've been able to reuse them. You can see here they've all got nice Lord of the Rings names, so these are the nodes on this cluster. The domain's called Mordor, and the admin is called Sauron, and the cluster is called Precious. So it gets worse than that, but I won't bore you with it. All right, so here's an availability group, AdventureWorks AG. This has a listener, and it has a resource. We'll pop into... We'll go and look at Management Studio for this. Let's try and put this into full screen mode, see how this works. So if we go into Management Studio, this is where you'll see the availability group. This is where the availability group is created. So I go into Management Studio and create it. When you do create it, it gets created here on the cluster. So I don't create it using the cluster admin tool. I create it in using Management Studio. But it comes here as a resource. And if I fail over, it will come here. It will fail over to another node as a resource. So these two things are associated together. But the actual creation is done inside Management Studio. All right, so let's go and have a look at Management Studio. And just before we do that, I'll show you one more thing. Here is the SQL Server Configuration Manager with the properties for my SQL Server instance. And you'll notice this always on High Availability tab. This is the first thing I have to do if I'm building one of these availability groups. I have to go and check this box and say that this instance is participating in an availability group. If this SQL Server instance was not part of a Windows cluster, I wouldn't see this tab. So if you're going to do this and you think, hey, where's the tab gone? That machine is not part of a Windows cluster, because this tab will only appear once you've done that work. So you do that, it's on a cluster, you come here, you enable it, you're done, you're ready to go and create your availability group. You come over here into Management Studio and you create one. So we have one here already, AdventureWorks AG. It's got two availability replicas. Frodo is the secondary, and Gimli, which is my SQL Server clustered instance. This is a virtual SQL name, so I'm combining SQL clustering in an availability group, which is called Gimli, and it has two availability databases. So this has already been created. And I could go in here and I could have a look at the dashboard for this availability group. So this is where your DBA would manage this group. This is where you do your work and find out, well, how are things working and is things in a good state. You'll see a couple of states, synchronizing and synchronized. Synchronizing is a good state. It doesn't mean it hasn't caught up yet. Typically, what it means is you're not in synchronous mode, you're in asynchronous mode. So if you've set up your partner to be in asynchronous mode, you'll never see synchronized on the dashboard. You'll only see synchronizing. Okay? Just to be a little bit careful with that. Gimli's our primary, Frodo's our secondary. I have the ability to look at always-on health events. For those folks that came along at the beginning of the week when I was talking about extended events, which is a fascinating technology in SQL Server, there's an always-on extended event session that's always running. So I can go in here and find out, you know, have I had a failover? Have I had some problem with my database replication? So this is a great place to go and to view that. What else can we do? Look at the cluster. So here, we're getting a little overly technical here, but I need to explain that in a Windows cluster, we've changed the way that the quorum works. So in a previous version of clustering, this quorum was a single point of failure. So if the quorum disk, which went away, that cluster was down. So now in a Windows 2008 cluster, it's a very kind of simple concept, really, which is that a majority vote means the cluster stays up. It's as simple as that. So if I'm doing disaster recovery across multiple sites, I need to be careful to turn off the voting capability for that disaster recovery site nodes. Because if I don't, and I lose connectivity between my primary and my disaster site, then my cluster will go down because it won't have quorum. So there's this capability to turn off votes. And it's really just a command that you can issue with cluster.exe. You name the node, and you say node weight equals 0, 0 or 1, which turns that voting capability on or off. So you can have a look at the quorum. You can fail over here from one to another. It's another thing you can do. And the last thing I want to show you very, very quickly is adding all of these counters by right-clicking on the title of the display there, on the title of the of this grouping. And this would allow me to add all of those counters to my panel in real time. And these are the kind of counters that you care about deeply based on how much overhead am I adding to my replication. All right, so that's really how you'd view one and the kind of things that you can do with it. So what about creating one? So we'll go over to a different machine. We'll go over to Boromir. and we'll have a look at what's here, and we'll try and create one, see what goes on. So availability group, I'll say new availability group wizard, which again I won't see unless I'm on a Windows cluster, right? So let's give it a name, and what we'll see is an error. Well, not really an error, it's really kind of a pointer. Full recovery mode is required. So it won't allow me to set up this database as part of an availability group unless that database is in full recovery mode. So I need to come out and I need to put that database into full recovery mode. So, who knows the answer? Is that in full recovery mode yet? Why not? Yeah, because I need to do a backup before that change is actually takes place. Because if I run and say again, I'll get a different challenge. And it will tell me a full backup is required. So I'm going to go and do that. Take a full backup of Northwind. And we need somewhere to put it. So I'm using Sauron, which is also my domain controller and providing my iSCSI disks that I've built for the cluster. So it's doing a lot of functions in addition to DNS, AD, all kinds of things going on there. So I'm going to back up this database. I'm going to overwrite existing backup sets so that I have a new version of the database, and I'm going to put it out onto this Sauron precious backup. So I now have a full backup. So what I should see now is I should get past that set of problems for creating this group because I have full recovery mode and I've done a backup. So let's expand this a little because this is where all the action is really. So Northwind now works. It meets the prerequisites. So here's my screen where I'm setting up an availability group. This is what you really need to take away from this session. So what you do, you say, add the replica, so add the secondary replicas that you want to participate in this session. So in my case, I want Frodo to be part of this group. So the primary is Boromir and the secondary is Frodo. And I'm going to set up something called readable secondaries. I mean, I'm going to leave it in async mode without automatic commit. Okay? The endpoint will get created automatically with some default ports. Backup preferences, where do I want my database backups to go? Here I say prefer secondary. And there's a function that runs, it runs inside our maintenance plan wizards. If you use the maintenance plan wizard to create a maintenance plan, it will call a function that will inspect this configuration. So if you've said I want my backups to be on the secondary, if you run your backup script or your maintenance plan on the primary, it will say, am I the preferred backup? And it will say no. And life is good, it just won't back up. But on your secondary machine that says, yes, I am, that's where the backup's going to happen. It sounds a small thing, but if you've got a large database and you can back it up somewhere else, that can be very useful. And this is also where you set up the listener. I could go here and create a listener. I won't do it now, but I could create one. And then I could add, using the add button, multiple IPs to that configuration. DNS registration is done for all of those IPs at the time this listener's set up. So the other nodes that I can potentially fail over to, they already know about those IP addresses. And there's a driver, the 421 driver has got another attribute, multiple subnet failover equals true, that will mean that all of those IP addresses will be tried in parallel and not in serial on failover. So now instead of waiting for this 30-second serial queue for connection, it will expect one to come up and it will be done in parallel. Why? Because this significantly is going to reduce my connection time on failover. So this is, it's minor, but it's a highly functional change. All right, a lot of talking. So we come through here. I'm not going to do a full one. I'm going to do a join. And a join is going to require that I've done a restore. So it's going to say, join the database group, start the synchronization, but it says here you've already done a restore. Because the way you start is just like database mirroring or log shipping. You have to take a backup and you have to do a restore. So let's jump over to Frodo, which is going to be our availability group partner. And let's restore that database from that device where we backed it up. So we backed it up to Northwind NZ. So this should allow us to do a restore, but we need to be a little bit careful when we do that. So I'm about to do it. I'm also going to show you this, which is completely nothing to do with Always On really, but it's because I'm sitting on it. This is essentially RMAN, this kind of Oracle equivalent in SQL, where I can do a point in time recovery without having to remember where are all my backups and which ones do I need to apply in the right order. So I've got a nice way, it'll go out and figure it out for me and I can set a timeline. So that's kind of nice, just quickly while we're there. All right, the other thing that's new in SQL 12 is this checkbox, relocate all files to folder, which again is nice because if you're like me, you tend to restore databases to the wrong place or try and write them over each other. And this checkbox says put them in the default location for this instance. So that's quite nice. So I'm going to do a restore and that's what I'm going to do. That looks fine. That looks good. Overwrite the existing database. And here's where I need to be careful because I don't want to bring the database up with recovery. Like database mirroring, I have to bring the database up with no recovery for this to work. So let's see how we do, see how far we get. Database Northwind has been restored and it's sitting there in a restoring state. So it's ready now for this to work. So I can now go ahead and say, okay, let's go and do it. Instead of doing it here, I'll show you the script code that actually gets generated. So here's the code. So just a little bit of code to keep you guys awake. So who's going to answer another question for me? Why have I got a little red squiggly underneath the connect word? Perfect, SQL CMD mode. So if I want this to translate and to run, I'm going to have to take Management Studio and switch into SQL CMD mode so that it knows about the extra SQL syntax. Great facility of SQL Server, by the way. Very common, for example, in Oracle to have scripts that connect to multiple SIDs during the same run. So it's good to be able to do that same kind of thing because I can manage multiple instances in the same script. So I go and start up the endpoints, which are actually already started, but that's all right, just showing you the code here. And if it hasn't started, I'll start it up. And I do the same thing for Frodo. So I've got my communication paths working. And then I'm going to start up this extended event session to monitor the health of that connection at both ends. So there we go. All right, so here's where the action is. So I need to do a little bit of carriage return so that everybody can see what's going on here. All right, so this is the statement that was auto-generated. Create the availability group. It tells me where my backup preference is going to be, where my replica is, what my port is, and the mode for the replication. So if all is well, that'll come back and create that group, which it did. So we need to now join that group because it created the group, but it didn't join it yet. And there's one more thing we'll see that it didn't do either. So if we go back here, now what we'll see is that we have an availability group that we didn't have before, and this is the primary. And here are my replicas. Frodo is my secondary, and that's my Northwind database, and I didn't have a listener. All right, but if I go and look at the dashboard, what I'll see is that I've still got a little bit of a challenge because Northwind isn't synchronizing. Okay, so I've got an icon here. It's not synchronizing. There's a problem of some sort. And this is the kind of thing you might see if you're a DBA managing this. So this is the kind of place that you want to play. And I can go and say, okay, what's the warning for that database? The secondary database is not joined. So the availability group is up. The session is up, but that particular database hasn't been joined yet. So I need to go over to Frodo, and I need to do that. So here we come in here, and what we're going to do is have a look at the availability groups. Here's our new group. And we'll see here, if we go down to availability databases, we've got this little warning icon on Northwind. So right click and join to availability group. If I'd have used the finish button in the wizard, it would have done all of this, but then you wouldn't have had the conversation about the need to join, which you'll see from time to time, and the actual code. It's good to see the code and how that works rather than just next, 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 and hoping for the best. All right, so that's now running. So what I'm going to do now, just to close this off, is go back to Boromir, and what we'll see, I've got... what we're going to do is run a query, let's say, from the products table. So here's our query from the products table, and we can see the table, and it runs quite happily. And if we go across to Frodo and have a look at the state of the database, which should have changed from restoring to synchronizing. Remember, it will never be synchronized because this is an async replication. But now I can go down to that same database without doing anything, without creating snapshots of mirrors and so on, and I can just go and read it. That's a simple demo. I've just run a select statement, but this is the key deliverable of SQL Server 12, in my opinion. It's this easy capability to just do direct reads from your secondary systems. If I went and run an update, which I won't do in the interest of time, I could go to the primary, run an update, and you'll see this update appear on the secondary machine. I didn't do anything. I just pressed a button. You said that button, right?
I did.
So don't have two of everyone, have four of everybody. That's even better. All right. Availability group. So we looked at that. Client application failover. Let's talk about it. I'm having to go quite fast. Apologies for that. An availability group virtual name. You use the name, connect to the name instead of the actual server name. So if you have a listener for your availability group, if your application needs to fail over, if your server fails, it will just go across. The availability group will move from one node to another automatically on the cluster, and you don't change anything in your code. You just connect to that availability group. So in your connection string, you name the listener and you name the database within that group that you want to connect to. That's it. Now you're isolated from hardware failure.
All right. The primary coming back up.
Yep. In the case of the primary coming back up, can you?
You've got the different machines.
Yep.
File over to another one.
Yep.
And it becomes the primary.
Yep.
Can you force it back to
the... Yes, you can. You can do a manual force back to that original server if you want to. I mean, you have to think carefully about whether you want to or not, but yes, you can. You can do that. Just the same as database mirroring. All right, so connecting a new primary once the failover is complete and the virtual name is online. So I want to show you that. I'm going to press this button again. I hope the gentleman hasn't left the building and hope that it switches over back to my demo machine. Session review, demos. Crap.
I promise it won't happen.
You promise it won't happen again. You shouldn't have said that in front of all of these people. That was. If it happens again, it's not so bad, but promising it won't, that's a whole different story. All right, so we'll go and look at listener redirection. So what I'm going to show you here is I've written an application. I have written an application called alwayslistening.exe, which I wrote. It's a simple app, so hopefully it should be all right. And what it does is it uses a view. And this view is quite a simple thing, vwcontacts.sql. And here's the view. It selects all of these columns from a table, but it adds a couple of extra columns. Oops, I ran the wrong, tried to create it. It runs a couple of extra columns, which are here, the source server and the source machine. So if I'm on a cluster with a virtual name, the last column is the physical machine that table resides on, and the previous column is the virtual name of the server. All right, so it's using that It's using that. So it runs this application, and this is connecting. Let's say, for example, I connect it to my, that's the virtual name. That's my SQL Server virtual name. All right, so what we see here is Gimli is the source server, and the source machine is Legola. So I'm using the actual virtual name of the server. But I can also use the listener name, which from memory was AW listener. So that should give me the same, did I type it in right? Now I've got an extra character. It's just going to time out, take a few seconds to time out because of my clumsy fingers. And what you'll see is that using this listener is effectively the same as using the virtual server name. There we go. So that's it, really. A simple demo. But you don't care where this database resides. You just use the name of the listener and you connect to your database. All right. This is where we find out whether it's going to happen again or not. Whee, cool. Very good. All right, so readable secondaries. We showed you in a demo just now that we were able to read directly from the secondary, which is fantastic. How does that actually work? Well, here's how it works. As you're collecting traffic, as your transactions are being committed at the primary, in async mode or in sync mode, these transactions are also being sent to your secondary instance. So at connection time, there's a negotiation that goes on based on the LSNs. And as transactions are being committed, they have to be flushed to the transaction log. They have to do what's called hardening the log. So if you commit a transaction, every change to the transaction log, every LSN has to be applied that shares that same transaction ID. And it has to be flushed to persistent storage for that transaction to be committed. So the log hardening, this is called log hardening, that happens over at the secondary. And that's all going on concurrently with the log cache being flushed to the secondary log. So once it's actually been applied, once that commit's taken place, once it's flushed to the transaction log, the commit goes back to the primary machine, which can also commit. It's a little bit different to mirroring because the way I've described it sounds like it's very much at a per transaction message level. But there's actually a little bit of difference in always on technology because it uses buffers and it knows about LSN numbers. So it actually buffers up these messages. So it's not just like one transaction at a time. It can be three or four that are in this buffer. So it's a bit more effective. It scales in a more performant way. The other thing that you need to take away from this is this red box, this redo thread. The redo thread is responsible for applying these transactions that have been written to the log to the database. Because as you know in SQL Server, the writing of the log and the writing of the database files are separate processes. So sure, it's gone to my log, but it hasn't hit the database yet on my secondary. So that's done by the redo thread. Okay? And there is one redo thread per database. This is where your read latency might come in. Because if you're hitting your primary very, very hard, now the challenge is this redo thread has to keep up. Okay? And the further behind it gets, the more potential for me to have some latency for my reads. And there's some documentation around what kind of numbers you might expect to see with that latency. But it's not very high. It's pretty damn good. You can't assign more threads. There's one thread per database. Each database has one thread and you can't assign more threads. Now, under normal behavior, this would be a problem. Right? Anyone thinking about the problem? If the redo thread is continually writing to the database, what's my problem going to be? Blocking. Because I'm trying to read from this database because I've just said, hey, that's a really good use of it. So I'm reading and concurrently writing to the same database. Under normal SQL Server behavior, readers and writers block each other. Okay, because a read will take out a shared lock, which is inconsistent with an exclusive lock to do an update. So these guys, readers and writers, block. It's the opposite of Oracle. The way this gets fixed is by all of those read connections are automatically mapped to something called snapshot isolation. so that this blocking doesn't occur. Good news and bad news, as always. The good news is there's no blocking. The bad news is this is going to hit your tempdb hard, because snapshot isolation uses tempdb. That's where the version store is kept. So if you're doing this, and you're doing this in anger, take care of your tempdb. And there are some good best practices around doing that. So it's not really a problem, providing you know up front that tempdb is something you need to cater for in this environment. Okay? So that's something to take away. All right. Redirecting read connections. Fixed. All right. So what I'm going to do very, very quickly is show you another couple of things. If you want to do automatic redirection of reads, what you can do is set up something called a routing URL. So each instance has an URL. So it has a port number and an instance name. So for example, if I'm running this on Legolas, this is a script that tells me what that URL is. Down the bottom here is my full URL with port number for that instance. Okay? And if I right-clicked and changed, let's do it, if I right-click and change my connection to Frodo, and I run it again, I will see a different set of outputs. So there's my URL for Frodo. And this kind of took me a while to figure this out, because I wasn't quite sure what this should be. So you need to know this. You need to know what the URLs are by running a script. Once you know what they are, you can set up something called URL routing. And URL routing is here, where you have an availability group, and you say, if this availability group is acting in the primary role, here are my secondaries. And you have a comma-separated list of what those secondaries are. What you can do if you're using .NET version 4.2.1 is you can set up another attribute in the connection string called application intent equals to application intent equals read only. And what it will do, it will go to this routing list and it will go to the first instance, and it's not load balanced at this point in time. I would expect that to change over time, but right now it will go to the first one that's up and running that's in my list and connect to that. If I've got read intent only in my connection string. This is awesome, because now without me doing anything, all my reporting services reports, all my batch queries, they're being flicked over to the server that I've designated as my report server. This unloads, I'll have to come back to questions at the end of the session, this unloads my read work to my secondary server. And again, like I said at the beginning of the talk, that's the key, that's the crown jewel. So we'll run that. Cannot process it, never mind. Hopefully it will still work, unless I've broken it. And we'll go in and we'll try this application intent equals read only. And you can see right now it's Gimli and Legolas, and it switched. Hopefully you saw that. I did it quite quickly. It switched to Frodo. I didn't know. I don't care. My app's still running. But now I happen to be reading the table from a different server. Very useful. Think of reporting services and people grumbling that there's blocking and reports taking a long time. We'll just flick them over to another box. Yes, there's a cost. Yes, you have to license this passive box because it's working and doing stuff. But it's very useful. So this is application intent. All right, secondary replica backups. We're going through a lot of stuff here. I said when I set up the availability group that I wanted my backups to take place on the secondaries. And I mentioned a function. This is the function with this long name here. You can call it in your code if you want to, but it's also built into the maintenance plan tasks if you create your backups through your maintenance plan wizard. And as I said before, all this function does is it reads the config that you set up when you created the availability group. So if you run this code on your secondary box where you've said, this is my backup, it will come back and say true. It's equal to one. So I'll do the backup there. If not, I'll just carry on and not do anything at all. Very, very easy implementation. You can add the function to your scripts, and I'll repeat again, it's already built into the maintenance plan wizard. Be careful with backups. Don't go crazy. Because like it's got up here on the screen, you can put those transaction log backups across multiple machines or multiple secondaries. They're all part of the same log chain. What does that mean? Well, it means a couple of things. It means that the primary knows what the current LSN is. It knows where my backups are up to. But it also means that if I lose one of those backups on one of those machines, I now don't have any point in time recovery because I've lost my log chain and I'm going to have to go back to a full backup. So if you're doing this kind of thing, if you decide to actually really go nuts and not only offload your full backups, but offload your transaction log backups to multiple boxes, that's fine, but make sure that you store those backups in a central location because you can't risk one of those places going away because now you've lost all of your backups. Hopefully that made sense. All right, let's talk a little bit about clustering. That's always on availability groups and application intent read-only, very, very key. So a few changes to clustering, multi-site clustering across subnets, SQL Server finally, been waiting for this, supports different IP addresses on different nodes within a cluster. That's great, but the real problem is you need your SAN storage replication between those two sites. That's the hard part of doing a Geo cluster. To my knowledge, we've got one customer here in New Zealand only that I've seen. I still believe there's only one customer, which is ASB Bank, that has a Geo cluster. They've been using it for a long time, and really good guys that look after that. All right, so another change that's been made is this concept of flexible failover policy. So instead of just saying to a cluster node, failover when something really bad goes on, we give you more capabilities to configure what really bad actually means. And you can do things like if the performance is beyond a certain threshold, then I'm going to fail over. So it gives you a bit more capability around what failover actually means. Some more diagnostics, network attached storage, tempDB on a local drive. Interesting. I haven't tried it. Maybe someone in the room has. You set up a cluster and you set up your tempDB on the SQL cluster, but you put it on a local disk. So maybe you've got like an SSD drive and I put my tempDB on my SSD drive. That should help things along a bit. That would be an interesting thing to test. Quite like to see that. Multi-site, been around for a while, but you can now have different networks rather than having to have a VLAN across all of these machines. So that's a nice thing to have. But you still have to have a third-party replication to take care of your shared SAN storage. So you'll still be dealing with a couple of vendors for that solution. Flexible failover policy, instead of, as I said, is alive and looks alive checks, in the current version, or sorry, the previous version, not the current version now, in SQL Server 2008 for clustering and the cluster service, it's just doing an is-alive check and a looks-alive check. And the older version, a looks-alive, just goes to see if the service is running on that box. Okay? And what the is-alive does is it does a select at server name every 60 seconds. That's changed. That doesn't happen anymore. Now it calls this stored procedure SP Server Diagnostics, which returns back a whole wodge of stuff using DMVs. It's quite an overhead in running that, but it gives a lot of information, and that allows this failure condition level to actually work because you need that extra information that's coming back from the heartbeat. So that's kind of nice. I won't run that. Let's move that. You can always run that. You get a lot of information back. All right, what else can you do? You can combine these availability groups with clustered instances. So I talked a little bit about that, and here's an example. So I've got a primary site and a disaster recovery site. They've both got a SQL cluster. One's FC1 and one's FC2. But I'm also using an availability group to move those databases between those two locations. So it's a little bit like that picture we saw earlier in the session. On the bottom right, where we had two clusters, two actually separate clusters, not a geo cluster, two clusters, but an availability group between them. So the clusters are giving us our high availability at each of these locations, and our availability group is effectively giving us our disaster recovery. So we're combining these things. A last word on a DR scenario. There are things that you have to do. And I've been with a few customers recently, and they said, well, you know, what actually has to happen on a DR scenario? Well, providing you've got one in four customers I go to actually has one, so hopefully you're one of those four and not one of the other three. So providing you have a DR plan and it's documented and you test it, this is what you need to do. You've had a failover on FC1. your manual process to bring the database back up, if you're using an availability group, you're going to have to force quorum at the cluster on FC2 to bring the Windows cluster back up and full service on one of the nodes so that the cluster actually starts. Then start the cluster on the other nodes, which will bring up the second instance, and then force service allow data loss because you've got to force this availability group across to your DR site. And then the last thing, go and think about your quorum configuration because your old primary is your new secondary and vice versa. So you're going to have to manually turn off that voting capability that we talked about previously. All right, so that was quite a lot of talking in a short time, which you probably didn't need after your previous night. But there you go. Hopefully it made some had some value. That's my email address. If you have questions, I guess this related content is coming to an end. I don't know how much of this is left. This didn't get done. All right. Please remember your evals. Enjoy whatever's left, whatever sessions you have left to go to. I don't think there's an awful lot more to be said. Remember the Auckland SQL Server Users Group. Dave Dustin is down here at the front. Just head up a little hand there, Dave, if people want to know more about that, because it is very active. There's another user group in Wellington. They meet monthly. It's great to share ideas between between yourselves. I think that's a great thing. So, and the topic this month is always on. So if I went too quick or too unintelligibly, you'll get a second chance. All right, thank you very much, and do enjoy the rest of your time.